Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tis the season for holiday cheer and celebration. Sometimes, however, there's too much of that and not enough care taken on the road home. This is the time of year when we see a lot of drunk drivers. And the police are out in force looking for those who overindulge and get behind the wheel. If you end up being one of those people, what are your rights? What can you expect from the police and from the courts? Well, Andy Betterman, attorney with the law firm of Greenberg and Betterman, is back with us with our Ask the Lawyer segment. I'm sure there are a lot of questions about DUIs, DWIs, drinking and driving. What are your rights? Now is the time to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHUR. FM. Andy, good to see you. Thanks for coming back in.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
This is some serious stuff here. Drunk driving continues to be very problematic across this nation. And certainly the D.C. metro area is not immune to it. From your perspective, do you see a lot of DUI cases? Do you represent a lot of people in this?
I handle civil cases, not criminal cases. DUI and DWI cases are criminal cases, but I've seen a number of them in my lengthy career. Mm-hmm. Seen many of them in my lengthy career, if there's any way you can avoid being involved in the criminal justice system due to your drinking and driving, I would do so. It's not fun. It's not a process that you want to have to involuntarily participate in. Friends of mine, that's my most personal experience through friends of mine, have gotten into trouble with this, and it really is, it's a big, big problem. Mm-hmm. Big problem. You are generally given a breathalyzer at the scene. If you refuse a breathalyzer, your driving privileges are automatically suspended. If you take the breathalyzer and you blow over the legal limit, then you're going to be arrested and you're going to be incarcerated. And your car will be seized at the scene and impounded. And even worse, you're going to have to go to court. And more often than not, if it's your first offense, you're going to be put on probation. And if you're put on probation, then your rights really are limited going forward while you're on probation. Your rights to travel may be limited. Your rights to drive may be limited at certain times. And you're going to have to report to a probation officer periodically. And you're going to have to be tested for alcohol and drugs in your system.
Mm. That's a lot. Let's go back to where this may actually start. If you are leaving a party or leaving a bar, and you've had a few, what is too much drinking?
I think too much is a very individual thing. I mean, I'm not a tall man. Mm-hmm. I'm about 5'6", and I really can't handle much alcohol. So I know what my limit is. You know, I think it's an individual thing, and each of us over time develop a sense, if you will, of what we know our limit is. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, if you're at a party or wherever you are, a party or a bar, and you drink too much, or you think you've drunk too much, then you shouldn't drive. Someone should drive for you, or you should take a taxi or an Uber or a bus. But just don't get behind the wheel, mm-hmm. especially this time of year.
And here's the thing. So if you get in your car and you're driving home or wherever you're going, and the police pull you over, what are your rights? Because you said something that kind of struck me. You said that if you refuse the breathalyzer test, you can do that?
Well, yes, you can. I mean, you don't have to do it, but they'll offer it to you. Most folks do take it. because they're at the scene of literally a crime, and the police have told them to do so. But if you don't do it, and some folks don't, probably because they know they're really intoxicated, then in most states your privileges will be suspended for a while due to that. So I would never advise a client not to submit to the breathalyzer.
Okay. You say just go ahead.
Just do it and get it over with. That's all.
Do they – has the breathalyzer now taken over for those sobriety tests where they have you walking a straight line and touching your finger to your nose and all of that?
No, I think it's supplemental to that. The police still conduct field sobriety tests because that's a pretty good sign, indication of, you know, of your level of intoxication. That's been supplemented in the modern era by scientific tests like the breathalyzer and, in really bad cases, blood tests. For instance, if you're in an accident, and even if you're not charged with driving while intoxicated, if you're in an accident, you go to the hospital, they're going to draw blood from you, and they're going to do a blood screen, including an alcohol screen, and that will reveal the level of your intoxication at the time of the incident.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are, once again, doing our Ask the Lawyer segment, and tonight we're focusing on drinking and driving. What are your rights if you are pulled over and charged with a DUI, or depending on where you live, a DWI, or driving while intoxicated? Let me go to Rick. Rick, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Rick. What's on your mind?
I have a question. Sure. Okay. I got a DWI. I was driving my car. I hit a curve. I mean, I bust my tire. Nobody around. So I was sitting there waiting for a tow truck, and the police came. I had my keys in my pocket. I'm sitting there saying that I got to get my tire fixed, and they gave me a DWI, locked me up.
Okay.
And then I paid for a lawyer, and then I got charged with DWI, and I wasn't even in the car driving. I mean, can they do that?
Look, they can pretty much do what they want to do at that time. The question is whether a judge or a jury will later decide whether what they did when they did it was proper. But in your particular case, I mean, I wasn't there, but, you know, the D.C. police are within their rights, or the, really any police are within their rights, to stop and inquire of the driver of a disabled vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're not driving the car at the moment, doesn't mean that you weren't driving it when you were under the influence of alcohol. But obviously something happened at the scene there to cause the police officer to suspect that you were intoxicated, and he or she conducted all the appropriate tests, I assume, to determine that you were. But you say you currently have an attorney, so you should really speak to and work with your attorney to make sure that you present the best defense possible.
Well, I mean, I had an attorney, and I had to take a DWI. They gave me guilty. You didn't do nothing. Pay all that money for nothing.
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I'm sorry you had a bad experience, but I mean, obviously there was enough evidence for a judge or a jury to decide that you were intoxicated.
Okay. Well, Rick, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Attorney Andy Betterman. This is our Ask the Lawyer segment. We're talking about drinking and driving. If you have a question about the legalities of that, what your rights are, again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that I think, and this may be similar to Rick's situation, if you are a conscientious person and you're thinking, yeah, I can make it home, but then you realize after a block or two or a mile or two or what have you that, oh, maybe I can't make it home, and you pull over and you decide to just sit. If the police come up and your car, you're behind the wheel, but you're not moving, can they charge you with a DUI or a DWI?
I would think so, yes.
Well, now, why is that?
Because even though you're not driving at the moment, you are sitting in the car behind the wheel. So you have driven, right, to get to where you are, and you may drive again. Even In order for you to be charged with driving while intoxicated, I'm not sure the vehicle needs to be moving. Mm-hmm. I think you need to be in or either in the car or near enough to the car that they could draw the inference that you had been driving.
Now, here's my other question, and this really gets down into the nitty-gritty of this. So if you leave the bar and your car is in a parking lot and you realize that you are too drunk to drive, but you don't leave the parking lot and you end up and you sleep in your car and the cops come up, could they charge you even though you've not moved?
Maybe. Look, they can do whatever they want to do mm-hmm. at the scene. That's the bottom line. That's how our system works. But I think it's highly unlikely that if you're in a parking lot and sleeping in your vehicle, right, that you're going to be charged. The police have better things to do. When you're in the parking lot, sleeping in your car, you're not driving on the roadway endangering others. Look, the bottom line is if you think you've had too much, park your car somewhere safe, call a friend, call a family member, call a taxi, an Uber, whatever. Just don't drive.
If you can't help it, don't be in the car.
Exactly.
Ooh, okay. Something to think about. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What are your rights when it comes to drinking and driving? Alvin calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Alvin. What's on your mind?
Yes. So as I was saying, I'm just concerned about not drinking and driving, but by sleeping. Let's say, you know, because I'll leave my home sometime early in the morning, go to work, get off after work, and then I do some food delivery with Uber and DoorDash and stuff like that. So my concern is going home sometimes at night, I feel a little bit sleepy. So, you know, if I was to get pulled over by, you know, drifting and stuff like that, what would that case like that be?
Look, if you have not been drinking alcohol and you're not intoxicated, the fact that you're sleeping in your vehicle, excuse me, provided that it's parked somewhere safe where it doesn't endanger others, shouldn't be an issue at all. I don't think you have much to worry about with respect to that. If you park your car,
I don't think it would be like while the vehicle is sitting, but like I was driving on the road and I might fall asleep.
Well, if you drive on the road and fall asleep, that's a different story. Then that's what we call negligence. You know, you're not exercising care for yourself and for others who are on the roadway. So if you're driving and fall asleep and you cause an accident, then you're going to be responsible civilly, not necessarily criminally, because you haven't exercised reasonable care and you're driving at a time when you know or should know that you're too tired to drive and you might fall asleep. The bottom line is if you feel that way, you should pull over on the side of the road or preferably into a parking lot somewhere and go to sleep for a while and get some rest.
Yeah. All right, Alvin, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about drinking and driving. What are your rights? We are talking to attorney Andy Betterman. This is our Ask the Lawyer segment. Let's talk to Chris. Chris, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Chris. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? How are you guys doing?
Just fine,
well,
thanks.
Thank you. Well.
Good. I just wanted to make some comments, and then you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think from my experiences, I've heard, so if you're drunk and you're leaving the bar, and you know you can't drive, but you sit in your
car.
Yeah.
Chris, can you call us back? We've got a really bad connection, and we're not understanding, and I want to make sure. So I'm going to hang up. Call us back if you have difficulty getting through. Just keep trying because I do want to hear your question. So give us a call back if you can. Tanya, calling from Greenbelt. Tanya, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Tanya, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
How are you doing, Harold?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
I just want to be completely honest, short and sweet. I unfortunately have gotten a couple DUIs in my lifetime. No matter what, even though I'm wrong, at the end of the day, if you put yourself in a situation for yourself to get subjected to that, that's what's going to happen. I don't care if you're in Stafford County, Greenbelt, Germantown. It's going to happen. If you really care about yourself and you care about other people that you share the road with, just don't do it. When I got my DUIs, cabs weren't that cool. There was no Uber. That's no excuse. But now there are so many ways that you can prevent this. Guys, just don't do it. You will get fined. You will get your insurance goes sky high. You will have to have this on your record for 7 years, period. Just don't do it.
Okay.
Well said. Well said.
Tanya, thank you so much. Let's talk about that, too, because I think Tanya really makes, an interesting point that now there, first of all, there are so many options. Taxis, Ubers, friends, if you have it. But because there are so many options, it's probably highly unlikely that you're going to get a lot of wiggle room from police or the courts.
You may or may not. As I said, I don't do criminal work, so I've not handled a lot of DWI cases in my career, but I've been exposed to them. But the bottom line is that the courts do, as they should, come down very hard on this type of activity. I was driving to the office this morning, and I heard on the radio a news story about drinking and driving. And the one stat that stood out to me was that in the U.S. last year, about 30% of the auto accidents that involved death involved an intoxicated driver. So the reality is a motor vehicle is a very powerful weapon, if you will, if not used properly. And if you're not capable because you've been drinking of driving it safely, then you're going to hurt somebody and you're going to pay. And you should pay.
What's your website real quick, Andy, before I go to a break?
It's gblawyers.com.
Say again?
Greenberg and Betterman is gblawyers.com.
gblawyers.com. Thank you so much. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we will go back to the phone lines. We're going to talk to Mike calling from Waldorf, Melissa also on the line, and Charles calling from D.C. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are sitting with attorney Andy Betterman, who is an attorney with Greenberg and Betterman. This is our Ask the Lawyer segment. If you have a comment or a question about driving while intoxicated, drinking and driving, DUIs, DWIs, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melissa, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I know you guys were talking about drunk driving, but one of my, maybe a question or a comment is, where are the policemen? I mean, the people today drive very aggressive. It is frightening driving on the roads. And I don't know if they're using speed cameras to really replace policemen on the road, but we need the policemen back on the streets. We don't see that anymore.
Well, we are, like you said, we are talking about drinking and driving. We're not talking about law enforcement outside of that. And so that's probably not the best focus of this conversation. While I appreciate your conversation, that is not the focus. However, I'm quite sure that as we do more stories about police officers and enforcement on the roads, I'm sure that question could very well be answered. But thank you so much for listening. Let me go to Charles calling from D.C. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Good evening. And my question and comment was that I had a friend of mine who was given a ticket for loitering in the car. Now, a lot of people now are living out of their cars, and I wanted to know, is that against the law in the district or Maryland, Virginia area? And in my estimation, the laws are not tough enough for texting and driving and drinking and driving. Do you think the laws should be tough? It seems like the laws are too loose when lives are in danger. especially texting while driving.
Charles, let me stop you there. Andy is willing to, you know, try to tackle that question. However, we are talking about drinking and driving tonight. But Andy is gracious enough to share his expertise. Go right ahead, Andy.
So your first question is about loitering, basically, in your vehicle as opposed to on the street. And every jurisdiction has anti-loitering laws. And I don't know the circumstances of the case that you're talking about, but I would assume that the D.C. police and the Maryland police and the Virginia police have the authority to charge someone with that violation if, in fact, they feel that there's probable cause that that law has been violated. With respect to drinking and driving, I think that the DWI laws are very, very strict. And, you know, if you're unlucky enough to be caught in the system once and more than once, then you're really, really going to regret it and you're going to pay a heavy price in terms of the impact on your life and the impact on your pocketbook. Texting and driving, I agree, is a real problem in this day and age. And there are laws against it. In a sense, it's treated almost as almost the same way as driving while intoxicated. But, you know, the reality is the police have to see it happen before they can do anything about it. And that's the bottom line.
And I would say to that point, it is very difficult for a police officer to see, to see someone texting and driving, for example. And so that, you know, that's one thing. And as a matter of fact, there's been discussion just last week on the Montgomery County Council about finding ways to implement new technology that at stoplights, for example, shows people, you know, texting as they are at light. So certainly, as is usually the case, it takes a while for laws to catch up with society. But Charles, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sheldon calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling, Sheldon. What's on your mind? Sheldon? Yeah, go right ahead, please. Turn your radio down.
I don't have my radio on.
Okay.
Okay, this is what I want to know. You drive down the street because you're a young black man. Montgomery County police officers will find a reason to pull you over, right? And the first thing they will say to us is, have you been drinking? And because I haven't been drinking, I refuse for them to give me a breathalyzer because I haven't been drinking. You know what I mean?
Because you haven't been or had been.
Excuse me?
You said you refused because you had not been or because you had been.
No, I refused because I hadn't been drinking and there was no reason for them to pull me over.
Okay.
And you know what they do? They will lock you up for refusing a breathalyzer, get your towed, and then after that, man, then I got to go through courts and all that. And regardless, in Montgomery County, regardless if you were drunk or not, they won't lock you up. So how do you win on that?
Well, you may never win, but I'd like to give you some free legal advice. Should that happen to you again in the future, do not refuse the breathalyzer. The reality is, under our system of laws, the police have the authority to stop you and to make a determination, in their opinion, whether you've violated a law. And if they feel that you have, then they have the right to seize you and take you to jail and keep you overnight. So should that situation arise again, if you're not intoxicated, if you had nothing to hide, let them take the breathalyzer test. What are you going to lose? You're going to lose a lot more by not cooperating than you will by cooperating. With respect to your allegations of racism in the force there, I've heard the same things over many years. But that's something you have to take up with the county government, the county administrators, and the police administrators.
But to that point, because he may have missed part of this conversation, where if you are pulled over and you refuse a breathalyzer test, well, if they believe that you have been drinking, then they can arrest you.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, Sheldon, yeah, you refuse a breathalyzer test, you have the right to refuse, but if they believe that you've been drinking, then yeah, they have the right. They have the authority to arrest you.
Right, and what, you know, whether a judge later feels that was appropriate or not is a decision that would have been made on a different day at a different time, but not when you're there within the police officer's power.
Yeah. Sheldon, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Chris, calling from Maryland. Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm sorry. I called in early. I got disconnected.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
On a couple of calls I've been hearing coming in. One of the first ones is just the recent guy. So just from experience, what I've learned is that the preliminary breath test on the side of the road, that's inadmissible in court, I believe, Mr. Bennett. If you can, I mean, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. The side of the road is inadmissible in court. And if you decide not to take it, it actually might hurt you more than help you. If you're pulled over and you weren't drinking, and if you blow into that tube and you show the cop you weren't drinking, it could do more good than it can bad. So it can help you out. And the second comment I wanted to make about the guy that was in his car with the keys in his pocket, I believe that if you're still in physical control of the vehicle, the cop can prove that you still have physical control of the vehicle. I've always heard to put the keys in your glove box or somewhere else and get in the back seat of your car. That way you're not in physical control. So I'm not sure if that's a good, if you heard anything like that, or you could correct me if I'm wrong.
Are you taking the bar, Chris?
No. Well, you've raised three points here. Number one, with respect to the breathalyzer test, I fully agree. It's easier simply to take it rather than not, especially if you haven't had a drop to drink. You got nothing to hide. And once you blow into it and they see there's no proof of alcohol in your system, they're going to let you go more often than not. I think if you voluntarily consent to a breathalyzer, it is admissible in court. I don't know where you heard that it was inadmissible. In fact, it's direct evidence that the prosecutor is able to use to prove your guilt. Number three, with respect to the earlier caller who spoke of himself being in his car behind the wheel.
He was saying that caller had his keys in his pocket.
Right.
The tire was being changed and he was outside of the car.
I understand. Yeah. And that really, it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and from officer to officer. But I would tend to agree. If I were representing you and you had too much to drink and the keys were in the glove box and you're in the back seat of your car and the car was lawfully parked, they probably would not arrest you.
Okay. Well, there you go. Chris, good luck with the bar. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, one of the things that I'm curious about, we often hear about the breathalyzer test, and they say, well, somebody blew a .08 or a .05 or a point. Talk to me about what those numbers mean and what is the legal limit.
It varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Maryland has one limit, D.C. has another one, Virginia has another one, and all the breathalyzer does is make a scientific determination based on your breath as to the level of alcohol in your system at the time. And if it's under the legal minimum, then you're okay. If it's above it, then you're not. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. I think in Maryland it's 0.8 now. I don't know what it is in D.C. or Virginia. Mm-hmm. But that's all it is. It's a minimum level for intoxication.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke earlier about, what is too much. I guess depending on height, weight, and how much you drink will determine, for some people, two drinks and you may not be over the limit. For some people, it may be one. Really, really kind of depends on your physical makeup and what you drink.
Yes, absolutely. I think everyone's different. Okay. I at least in theory, I would think a larger person would be able to tolerate more as opposed to a shorter person like me. Mm-hmm. But really, it's something you have to learn what your limit is.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing is that somebody, the lady talked about your insurance. What impact might a DUI have on your insurance policies, on your ability to drive, let's say, after a first offense?
Well, those are really two questions. Yeah. One relates to insurance. And mm-hmm. Obviously, if you have a record of a criminal violation because you drove while intoxicated, then that's going to catch the eye of your auto insurer. your current one or your new one, and especially if you have an accident where somebody's hurt. So it's better not to have something like that on your record, because if it's on your record, it's going to cost you more to insure yourself to drive. Okay? That's my answer to the first question. What was the second question again?
The other question is, the first one is about insurance, but the second one
was about limitations on driving.
Yeah,
right.
Limitations on driving.
Right.
If you do have a DUI
right.
or DWI.
If you're found guilty, right, and you're placed on probation, generally speaking, one of the conditions of probation, and certainly, and furthermore, while you're waiting for your case to reach the judge, the MVA places and may place restrictions on your ability to drive. A friend of mine, for instance, wasn't able to drive except to work. He could drive to work and come back at the end of the day, then couldn't drive again. And if he did drive and he was stopped, then the situation would have been far worse. I've also heard of people who have had their right to travel restricted because they are now in the criminal justice system and there's a national database. And my friend tried to fly somewhere outside the United States, and he got to the airport and he was on a list and he couldn't leave the country.
Wow.
He had to get permission from the judge. This was his first DWI offense, and no one was hurt. There was no property damage. But it's, like I said, you don't want to be caught up in this criminal justice system with respect to drinking and driving if you can avoid it.
There you go. Florence, calling from Baltimore. Florence, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was calling because I'm in a position to see the after effect of one receiving a DUI, DWI, and it just seems disparaging because from jurisdiction to jurisdiction to jurisdiction within the state of Maryland, young black males are given more harsher penalties. For example, if they receive their first DUI, it's a lot of times incarceration or a harsher penalty like that. Whereas if an older Caucasian male receives it, it is a PBJ or probation, and they have to get 4, 5, and 6 under weekends before they even give them a sentence to serve under the Division of Corrections. So can you speak to why it's such a disparaging between people who receive these when we all are in the state of Maryland, so we all should be subjected to the same penalty?
I mean, I wish I could answer your question and comment on why, at least in your experience, things seem to differ from county to county. One thing I can tell you is that I've never heard of a first offender going to jail, all right, unless there are some kind of extenuating circumstances that we don't know about. For instance, he might be this driver's first offense, and he has an accident and someone dies. But I've never heard of anyone being jailed on their first DWI criminal conviction. Everyone's. You mentioned PBJ, so it sounds like you have some experience with the law. PBJ is an acronym for probation before judgment, which means, and this is used in many first offender cases, the court finds you guilty, but it doesn't enter the guilty finding while you serve the terms of your probation. And if you serve them successfully, then at the end of that, then the finding of guilt is expunged. It's never entered. So you walk away clean. But I frankly can't comment on the difference between law enforcement administration from county to county and from ethnic background to ethnic background. Other than that, if you see something like this happen, you really need to complain to the court system, to the police, to the politicians, because those are the folks who have the influence to change things.
Florence, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the pieces of information that we were discussing earlier about blood alcohol content, it is the same in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. It is 0.8 and 0.08, excuse me. And so that is one. That is 0.08 is 0.08% of, or what is it, 800ths of.
It's a milliliter,
of a percent.
I believe.
Yeah. So, and you may think, well, that's a little right. bit, but it doesn't take a lot to take you off your feet, or at least where you would be driving impaired.
And in fact, in recent years, it's been lowered. It used to be 1.0.
Yeah.
And it was lowered to widen the net to catch folks. Mm-hmm. In recognition of just how bad a problem this is.
Yeah, and 1.0, as my mother would say, that's a lot of liquor.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know, in your system. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I don't know if you may be familiar with this. You may remember several years ago there were issues with bartenders or people who may have parties, for example, at their house, and they may see somebody who obviously is intoxicated and they're still serving them. Can you talk at least generally about that?
That's what we call social host liability.
Okay.
And that's civil, not criminal. And I do know a little bit about that.
So go ahead. There
are really two issues here. The first issue is, what is the liability of a bar, of a business establishment, who serves someone to drunkenness and then lets them walk out and perhaps drive? And I was actually involved in one of the leading cases in Maryland on that issue about 10 years ago.
Happened there?
In that particular case, a young man who was known to the bar to be a heavy drinker, spent a lot of time there, was served to gross intoxication. He was served about 20 drinks, like 16 beers and 4 or 5 shots over a period of 4 or 5 hours. Well, they said at the bar, at one point they cut him off, then they started serving him again. They knew that he lived over in Virginia, would have to drive across the river to get home. He was up in Damascus, I believe.
Oh my goodness.
They let him get behind the wheel. He drove down 270, rear-ended a car at 90, killed an 11-year-old, broke the hip of her 12-year-old sister, injured the grandparents. He went to jail for 8 years. He went to jail. But we sued not only the motorist, whose liability insurer offered their policy limits quickly, but we also sued the bar because we wanted to change the law in Maryland. And it ended up in the Maryland Court of Appeals, and we lost by one vote.
Hmm.
The court had the opportunity to create a civil claim, if you will. We call it a cause of action against restaurants and taverns for over-serving people who then go out and hurt others. But the Maryland Court of Appeals said it had to be decided by the legislature, and after many personal appearances before the legislature over the next several years, nothing happened because the food and beverage industry lobby is just too strong. So that's one issue. The other issue is, so the bottom line is, there's no civil liability for the bar or for the restaurant for over-serving someone. All right. The other issue that you mentioned is called social host liability, and it's similar. There really is no civil liability for a social host who overserves somebody. There may be criminal liability for serving a minor who's not old enough to drink, but there really is no civil social host liability in our area.
Mm. And so essentially, you said that's on the civil side, nor is, I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, there are no criminal laws as it relates to bars and social hosts. And you know, what would you... You know, what do you suggest if you are, you know, a bartender or you're hosting a party? Can you stop a guy from leaving your place, short of hiding his keys?
Well, I would assume that the person's in your home, you probably know them.
Yeah.
Or know someone who knows them. And the goal would be, yes, the right thing to do would be to stop them from leaving until they're sobered up.
Yeah.
Or call them a taxi or an Uber or something, but don't let them get behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Especially this time of year when there are a lot of parties. Imagine how many parties there are in D.C. this week.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's crazy.
Yeah. when you, after you are arrested, short of, you know, calling your law firm or anyone else for that matter, if you are arrested and let's say that no one was hurt, but you were just, you know, pulled over and they take you to the pokey. Can you give me kind of a list of things that you should do after they book you?
Well, I'm not sure there's much you can do except sit there and sober up and use your phone call to call someone who's going to come pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, sit there and mind your own business. And I mean, you know, truth be told, if you're arrested for a DWI, you're probably intoxicated. You're coming off an intoxication and you're probably pretty sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're going to go to the after you overcome the shock of being arrested and handcuffed and driven to the police station and put in a jail cell, which is quite frightening. If you've never been to a prison, it really is. It's very frightening.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sit there and collect your thoughts and sober up and wait for someone to come retrieve you. The real problem begins the next day when you're released and you have to deal with the criminal justice system going forward.
How is it, and we've heard these reports for many, many years, where someone, after a first offense, say, okay, they get released. But then when you have these people who are constantly, constantly being arrested with DUIs, how is it that in some cases people get released with multiple DUIs. What's going on in the court system when that happens?
Many people violate the same law over and over again, you know, especially in this context. But with each of your convictions, the penalties that you face grow dramatically. We haven't even mentioned the financial penalties that you're assessed with. So that's number one, right? If you do this over and over again, at some point in time you're going to be incarcerated, and the fines that you face are going to be very, very high, and you may not be able to pay them.
What's very, very high?
The thousands of dollars, if not more. As importantly is the problem with the Motor Vehicle Administration, right? Because you're not going to either your license will be be suspended, and in really bad cases revoked, and then you can't drive. And if you're driving on a suspended or revoked license, that's an incarcerable or jailable offense. So if you get stopped, right, and your license has been revoked, whatever the reason, then you're going to jail again, and you may not get out. So I think that to the contrary, that the worst violators, should they be caught by the police, are going to pay a very, very heavy price, as they should. Interestingly, in like Europe, like Germany, for instance, your first offense, you lose your license for 6 or 9 months.
Wow.
Period. Mm-hmm. That's why they don't have a problem, mm-hmm. because the penalties are swift and severe.
Mm. Now, there have been laws, for example, in the state of Maryland, where people now have breathalyzers in their cars that prevent them from driving. Where does that come from, and how does that work exactly?
I think that the so-called vehicle ignition lock is something that, was scientifically developed in the last 15, 20, 30 years, and the mechanism has been perfected so that it's accurate. And I think it was also something that was promoted by Mothers Against Drunk Driving and other similar organizations, sort of brought it into the public consciousness. But in bad cases, the court may order that your vehicle be outfitted with an ignition lock. And as I understand it, when you get in the car, you can't start the car unless you breathe into a device. And if there's alcohol on your breath, right, it's almost like a mini breathalyzer, then you won't be able to start your vehicle. And that's good, because you can't drive that car. It doesn't mean you couldn't drive another car that wasn't so equipped.
And I was about to say, and we had discussed this earlier, that just because your car doesn't work, that may not prevent you from getting into
none whatsoever.
You know, from civilly, and I know this is mainly a criminal thing, but what kind of civil penalties might someone incur from being involved with drunk driving? And what if you're a passenger and somebody is drunk driving? Could you be impacted by that?
Only if you're hurt. There are really no civil penalties in the sense that there are criminal penalties. It's different. Your civil claim would be one for, I most commonly see cases where people are either victimized by a drunk driver, they're going through an intersection, a drunk driver runs a light, an accident occurs, people are hurt, or you're a passenger in a car where, again, it's victimized by a drunk driver, or the driver of your vehicle is intoxicated and causes an accident and you get hurt. And then the issue becomes, did you know or should you have known that the driver was so intoxicated that he or she couldn't drive, right, and whether you should have voluntarily gotten the vehicle. Mm-hmm. But there are no civil penalties like there are criminal penalties.
And one of the things, and you may be familiar with this too, I was just kind of looking at this information about Officer Noah Leota, who was killed in Montgomery County.
Right, right. I remember that one. Yes.
Yes, and that was the thing that really kind of pushed not only these issues in Montgomery County, but even in the state of Maryland, where he had stopped.
Right.
To deal with an issue on the side of the road, and he was killed
right.
by a drunk driver, and we saw that there was a lot of push by his, specifically his father, but other members of the family, which really helped push the breathalyzer issues
yes.
in cars in the state of Maryland.
And he had also been drinking at a bar,
yes,
not too far from the scene of the incident, where this officer was doing a traffic stop, performing a routine traffic stop, and hit by a drunk who ultimately went to jail. I believe he was sentenced to a number of years, as he should have been, because he shouldn't have been on the road, and he killed this kid.
Yeah.
And it also highlights the issue that I mentioned before about restaurant liability for over-serving people who then go out and hurt others. And that's a big, big issue in civil law that needs to be addressed by the people that make the laws. We tried in Maryland and failed. I mean, hopefully in my lifetime it'll come to pass, because it really is. It's these three, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, are unlike virtually the rest of the United States that does recognize that sort of civil liability, which could serve as a great deterrent, you know, to people, to bar owners and restaurant owners over serving people.
Well, we hope that this conversation and others will get people to understand that, you know, the dangers of drinking and driving. Certainly, yeah, we want folks to enjoy themselves and celebrate, but we want them certainly around to see the new year.
Yes, we do.
As well, and, you know, not only being alive, but not behind jail
right.
bars.
And if you drink this holiday season, don't drive.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
It's that simple. Andy Betterman, thanks for talking to us. And look, you know, you have a safe holiday as well.
Thank you. And you folks do as well. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, December 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.